Welcome to the C3 Oxford Falls podcast. For more information about our church, please visit myc3church.net. Wherever you are listening from right now, get ready to receive as God has a word just for you.
Thank you. Hello. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you. You may be seated. Thank you. Can't wait to hear myself after that. It's always a joy to be amongst the C3 tribe. I feel very at home here, but more like an uncle visiting than a parent, which gives me license to be slightly irresponsible with the children because I am putting you to bed tonight. And if you're up, it'll be up with your parents and you've got indigestion because of what I said, it's your parents who'll have to deal with it. So I'm slight being a visiting uncle, sometimes I like that and always enjoyed not when visiting uncles came to our church and stirred things up. No, I pastored for many years, as was just said, and love the local church. It's the only generational move of God the world will ever see. Toronto's come and gone, Pensacola come and gone, they're all gonna come and go. But we will be here when all of that's come and gone, generationally. That's why the local church is the best idea God ever had. So thank you again for your love and your welcome. I have some resources here as usual so that you guys can browse and look and invest and grow on stuff that if I was here for the next 2 years, I would speak to you about, but I'm not. So here is my abiding legacy to you in these USBs, these flash drives. This is called Leadership Insider. It is 65 to 8 minute audios on stuff that no one told me. They were all holding out on me. Leadership wisdom, like things like the need for you to be intentional and deliberate and thoughtful about how much pain you can stand. Because it's not the vision that takes you out, it's the pain that comes with it that no one warned you about. And so being intentional about pain is a counterintuitive idea. It's like la 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 about pain. Let's avoid it, let's get past it, let's rebuke it. But you have to figure out that you cannot pick a dream or a vision or an idea for your life that's beyond your pain threshold. Don't do it. And if you're gonna get upset and hurt because people stab you in the back, then don't do it. If you get upset when family and close people betray you and shoot you, it's called friendly fire, then don't get involved. Because it's that pain no one tells you about. And pain is a place you all have to go through. Everybody has to go through a place called pain. It's a town, but it was built for tourism. Yeah. And sadly, millions of us have made it like Tokyo. It is a mega city where millions of us have stayed and put down roots, taken on a pain identity. We've had kids and grandkids there, so now the pain's generational in many of our families and communities. And pain was never supposed to be a place you stop. It's a place that you learn from, you plunder from it, you grab seed from it, you get ideas from it, and move on. Write a book, go on tour, write a song, but don't stay there. No one freaking told me that. So, stuff on leadership. Saw with your strength the blue one, my commitment, my belief that God made everybody brilliant at something. Most people live all their lives and never know what it is. That's a huge shame. So we want you to figure out what God made you good at, especially you young people in here, because we want you to do for a living what God made you good at, instead of like my generation, do jobs you hate, living for weekends that you love. We're gonna reverse that. Because you love the weekends, because at weekends you got to do what you loved. We're gonna reverse that so that our kids get to do all week what they love for a job. Because you can't do a job you hate for years and it not make you sick. And doctors in here know you've got people coming to see you this week who've got physical symptoms that you're treating, but the problem isn't physical. The problem is deep embedded unhappiness because they hate their lives. Not least of which is a job they hate that they've had to do to pay the bills, keep food on the table. Us baby boomers had to do that. We want our kids to not suffer that same way by helping them figure out what God made them good at and then flourish around that all of your life. So Hannah is here and she'll help you with that. I am back in town here, by the way, this Thursday doing my communication masterclass here in Sydney. at the Ridges Hotel. You want to know more about that? If you can come on Thursday, you can still arrange your week. Come on Thursday, spend a few hours with me on communication, and Hannah will tell you more about that. You can book through my website, paulscanlon.com. So love to see you if you can make it this Thursday in town. All right, I'm going to read to you from John 5, about 15 verses in this fascinating encounter Jesus has with this man that's invalid, crippled, paralyzed. It says, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for the feast of the Jews, and now there in Jerusalem was a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind and the lame and the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him what seems like a stupid, rude, inappropriate, non-empathetic question, doesn't it? Do you actually want to get well? Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool. When the water is stirred, while I'm trying to get in, someone else who's perhaps more able-bodied than him or who had more help than him gets in ahead of me. Then Jesus said, get up, pick up your mat and walk. At once the man was cured and he picked up his mat and he walked. I want to speak to you today about a message I've entitled Step Out of Stuck. Step out of stuck. It's not always easy to find an image that speaks well to the audio version, so I work on that. I think titles need to be thoughtful. I think we've been weak in the church on titles. If in a way people that write songs were as pathetic as we are with titles, there'd be no memorable songs in our minds from the Beatles and so on. So step out of stuck. At least a month from now, if someone says, what did he speak about? You'll have a title. And a good title is a title that when you recall it, the full content of the message is in that title. Step out of stuck. Because here we've got a very interesting scenario going on with this man that has been in this condition for a very long time. What's apparent at a basic reading of this passage, as we just did, what's apparent is that this man was totally stuck. But he wasn't just stuck physically. Everybody there is looking for a physical miracle. But this man was mentally paralyzed. He was emotionally and conceptually and relationally and circumstantially stuck, paralyzed, invalid. What he and no one else at Bethesda realized was that Bethesda is a trap. Bethesda is a trap masquerading as a place of miracles. Bethesda is a place in life that overpromises and underdelivers. Bethesda is where you go to get a breakthrough, not realizing that there is no breakthrough there. And you stay believing because you heard it was rumored someone else got a miracle, which is why they're all waiting their turn. And so I want to use Bethesda, the place Bethesda, as a metaphor for this stuckness, for this place where we get stuck and trapped in life. It is a metaphor for a season, a time in your life right now, those listening on the internet. It is a metaphor for a stuckness, being stationary, being parked up, being immobilized, paralyzed in a mindset, in a relationship, in a situation, in a problem, in a scenario, and you've got trapped in it. And no one's telling you that. No one has No one has stepped into your Bethesda, as it were, that's an outsider to the scenario, that has what I call zero gravity thinking about what you are tethered to and gravitationally anchored to. Someone comes in like Jesus that is not a part of that group with the most ridiculous thing that's ever been said at Bethesda, the most ridiculous, unreasonable thing that's ever been said to people that come there every day for years. When Jesus said to him, hey, by the way, do anybody around here actually want to get well? Which tells you Jesus is alluding to something far less easy to spot. He is messing with something far below the radar of why they think they're all there in his conversation with this man. Because they are trapped. Many of us are trapped, have been, in a season of life. Some people that are not here today, that are already on your minds when I've mentioned stuck and trapped. This is the conversations you've been having with some people in your life. You've been using these words. They've said to you, or you've said to them, I'm stuck. They've said to you, I feel trapped, I feel stuck. And the particular scenario is irrelevant, because the common thread is that we all feel at times in our lives that we are stuck personally. We are stuck sometimes as an organization, sometimes entire churches and movements and political parties and businesses get stuck and don't realize the nature of their stuckness because they've been stuck so long. You can no longer see the problem because you are now part of it. And you can't separate you from the Bethesda, as it were. And the problem with Bethesda here, and Jesus knew this, is that Bethesda is technically a good place. It is a miracle place. What's the problem here? Why would anybody have to say anything negative? Why would anybody suggest that you shouldn't be here in a place that is a good place, a place of miracle? But no one at Bethesda realized that Bethesda itself is the real problem. Your sickness, your paralysis, your particular physical disability or pain or problem, and I surmise from getting the feel of this, is that people here were so ill, were so disabled, that they're not the blind Bartimaeuses that are hustling for a few dollars. He's not there because he's still able-bodied enough to beg and to try and change his circumstances that way. He's not lying down in it like these people are physically doing every day. They're coming and parking themselves up every day at this place called Bethesda because they heard that occasionally an angel comes and stirs the water, and the first one in the water gets a miracle. Whether anyone's ever seen that or not, we don't know, but it's enough that it's rumored. This is where people like Lourdes come from in France. These places that are famous for people get miracles, and whether everyone has seen that or not, or it's been ratified or not, evidenced or not, the very chance that that might happen for me, for desperate people, is enough to make them go there. And these people are all as desperate comes in terms of their physical condition. And they are there at Bethesda. And Bethesda has become for them the primary problem, way beyond their physical problem that they're there to get a miracle for. And Jesus, when he says to him, how long have you been here? Or he makes inquiries about the man, and someone says to him, see that guy over there, Jesus? You don't believe how long he's been coming here. And Jesus makes inquiries. And he's making inquiries because he's wanting to know how much damage Bethesda has done to him before he speaks to him. Realizing that this man has a bigger problem, that his physical paralysis was actually the least of his problems and the easiest thing to fix. Bethesda is any opportunity, any relationship, any leadership, any church, any pastor, any organization that consistently but sincerely promises something that keeps us interested, that keeps us coming, but continually seems to under-deliver. This is why I've always advised pastors around the world, you should cut back on the God told me stuff. God told me is a poor tool to use to lead people. It is unnecessary most of the time. It's not required. What we shouldn't build churches where I need to tell you, God told me we should do this. We should build churches where we create a culture of let's just have a go at stuff. Then if it turns out to be brilliant, then I can say, God told me that, you know. Some pastors hear from God more than all the Old Testament prophets put together. And then God seems to change his mind frequently, but they don't tell us. They just hope we forgot that we told you God told us. Now we've changed our mind. We're going to be this kind of church, not that kind of church. Everybody's got like spiritual whiplashes. We keep hitting the brakes, changing our minds on what we felt God told us. It's unhelpful, and I don't want the emerging generation to pick up our bad habits of God told me, God told me, God told me, because it gives the feel of overpromising. And people secretly feel it underdelivers. And this is the nature of Bethesda. And worse still, Bethesda hides its underdelivering whilst making you feel it's your fault. This guy feels it's his fault because he said, I've got nobody to help me. When Jesus said, do you want to get well? He starts to tell him, well, you're obviously new around here. Let me tell you how the thing works. Let me tell you what the problem is here. And he was trying to ascertain the nature of how embedded the Bethesda psychology was in him. Because Bethesda, listen to this carefully, Bethesda is a structural, environmental, systemic trap. Did you notice that it has five colonnades? Do you know what a colonnade is? It wouldn't be a modern architectural word that we would use, but if you Google colonnades, what will come up are these archways that are built all around ancient architecture of Europe, where you'll see these arched ceilings held up by ornate columns. They were literally built for shade. A colonnade is a place built for a shade, like you get them temporarily, you can rent them on the beach, but these are structurally built in to ancient architecture all across the ancient world, these colonnades. It's not a modern language, but it was part of architecture back then, cutting edge. And this place had five, it says, colonnades. It had places where, as you waited for your miracle, structurally, we're facilitating your waiting because we've built shade. And so the colonnades are not incidental. It's not wasted narrative. The fact that there's colonnades alongside the water that you're waiting to get into tells you that your waiting has been facilitated. Your waiting has been thought through. It is colonnades. It is a structural trap. It is structurally permitting you to stay here, and we're going to make you stay as comfortable as possible because we've got colonnades. There's a system. This man says to Jesus, doesn't he? Well, there's a system, you know, and the system is that one of us, once a year, gets a miracle. Instead of saying to himself, how bad is that as a system? Because there's hundreds of us, and only one person, once a year, gets a miracle. So he's explaining to Jesus, I could have been healed before now, but the system's against me because the system favors only one, and it seems to favor the fittest amongst us because the ones that get in the water are the ones that have more help. I have no help, and so I move too slowly. So when the angels stood in the water, I guess is how the scenario went. I can't physically get there in time. So he's explaining to Jesus, you know, there's a system around here, you know. And what a system does is this, a system organizes your problem. A culture supports it. Imagine spending all your days with people who are as sick or sicker than you. All your days, every day. Any of you in here that have had any season of life with prolonged illness, you will know that in that season of your life when you're ill, you speak about sickness more than any other time of your life. Not in a negative way, it's just part of your new relational world because everyone asks you, how are you? And whether you want to talk about it or not, you're kind because they've been kind. And you're mailing or you're calling or you're talking face to face, explaining how you are. And they remind you and you want to forget about it. And so for that prolonged period, you have a culture in your life for a while. And that culture is giving attention to, facilitating conversations about what you're going through, what you're struggling with, your particular problem. So this guy spending all his life talking about his illnesses, his aches and pains, his disability, his frustration, and not being able to get into the water. They're comparing deterioration. If they've been there for years, they're all deteriorating in front of each other's eyes whilst they're hoping their turn will come. Imagine how much disappointment, how much helplessness, how much despair, how much depression would have been in Bethesda. This was the language, this was the feel, this was the culture of Bethesda. When you spend all your days with people that are in the same problem as you and worse, it becomes a culture. And Bethesda is a culture that supports your problem, not supports your need for a miracle, it supports your problem. And the structure, the colonnades, institutionalize it. The moment you build something, the moment it gets legalized like apartheid, the moment it has government backing, the moment it becomes policy, legislation, the moment it becomes like that, it is now structurally embedded in society, like, as I said, apartheid and many other systems of the world have been. It's not just supported by a system or a culture. It is now legalized. It is now structural. It is embedded in the country, whether it be the domination of men over women in many cultures of the world, or whether it be some racial situation like we have in South Africa, and by the way, in America, though American racism is not legalized like apartheid. It is just as embedded in the belief system of many white Americans as ever it was in Martin Luther King's time. And Martin Luther King was able to liberate America from external, explicit biases, but didn't make a dent on America's internal, implicit biases that makes a white cop shoot a black kid 6 times when if it was a white kid, you would have thought twice about it. What is that? What is that? It is a structural, embedded, systemic, cultural, generational belief systems. This is Bethesda. So this man not only is invalid, not only is he sick, his invalidity is very well supported. His problem is highly organized. His problem is very well structured. And many of you are stuck because your problem has now become very well organized. Fear is bad anytime. But once your fear becomes highly organized, some of you are highly organized warriors. And it is supported by your friends who are also warriors. So you have a cultural worrying circle of friends. So your worry, your fear, your anxiety, your stress, your insecurity, your shame, your guilt, once it becomes highly organized, once it becomes structurally embedded, once it becomes culturally supported, you can't see the problem isn't anymore your fear or your shame or your guilt. That's not the problem anymore. The problem is it's become organized and embedded and you are stuck. You are stuck in it. Even though you could stand on here today and say, you know what? The biggest thing in my life has been fear, and I'm really wanting a breakthrough. And you might come into the prayer line every single day. You might have counseling, laying on of hands to get free of your problem. That's why Jesus said to him, do you want to get well? It seems a stupid question. It's not a stupid question to someone whose problem is highly organized. Because this man believes that his miracle is divine intervention, and it's not. Your miracle, some of you, is not divine intervention. It's human reinvention. You have to move. You have to move. You have to leave Bethesda. You have to leave town. You have to change your phone book. You got to stop surrendering to the system. You got to stop having conversations about it. You got to stop finding definition through it. You got to stop being addicted to be needed on that issue in someone's life that has the same issue. Because that's when it becomes cultural and systemically embedded, and your fear and your anger, your unforgiveness, your bitterness becomes highly organized. And though you know I struggle with, and you can name your particular thing, you're not hiding it. This man's not hiding the fact that he's paralyzed. It's evident. There's no shame in his paralysis. We're all here for the same thing. What he doesn't realize is that his problem is that he has got so stuck in this system that promises freedom that Bethesda has become for him and for us a structural, systemic place of containment. Bethesda, listen to me, Bethesda is rigged for failure whilst promising you a miracle. That's why we stick around in it. It promises you a miracle. And when you're desperate as these people, you're gonna give it another day, which becomes another year, which becomes another 10, which becomes 38. You're gonna hang around because you're desperate. What else can you do? You're not physically fit enough to go and try and make a few dollars on the street like people like Bartimaeus did. These people you see begging on the street corners in Africa, in South Africa, where I was a couple of weeks ago. These people at the traffic lights with signs, holding babies, trying to pull on your heartstrings. They're hustling, trying to make a few coins. I get it, but these people, that wasn't your option to them. They're in this system. And what Jesus is saying to him and to all of them and to you listening by the internet online, is that Bethesda, this metaphor that I'm taking from Bethesda, it is rigged to keep you there. It is rigged to not let you go. It is rigged to give you shade and to give you comfort and to invite you to stay. It is rigged for long-term failure whilst promising breakthrough, and here's how more sinister it is, whilst blaming you for not getting your miracle. It's my fault. I just didn't respond right. I wasn't there when I should. I haven't been in church for a while. I didn't respond well. It's my fault. This is what this man's doing. Do you want to get well? Well, you see, Jesus, the problem is, we've got a system and it doesn't favor me and I can't get help. So he thinks that his prolonged non-miracle is his fault, instead of realizing, no, the whole, everything around here is rigged for you to stay sick. It is rigged for you to stay in your problem, and it is very organized. It's getting more organized. It is getting more structurally supported. I want to say to you today, you can step out of stuck. First of all, you've got to know you might be stuck. That's my gift to you today. Because if you've been trying and trying and trying, and you're not getting free, and you think it's your fault, all this stuff you've gone through in your head, you think, yeah, it is very organized now, yeah. It is all I talk about. It is culturally supported. I don't like it. I don't know how that happened, but it seems to be all that I talk about. The books I read about that, the conversations I read about that, my antenna is up for when something's said about that. I don't like that about me. I don't want that. But you think to be attentive to those things is to do with your recovery, and it's not. And today, maybe your breakthrough is not divine intervention. Maybe your breakthrough today is to get up. Jesus said to him, get up. He didn't say to him, I heal you of your paralysis. He didn't. This seems less of a physical miracle to me, and more of a psychological freeing of this man from the containment of Bethesda. He said to him, didn't he? Get up and get out of here. Get out of here. Jesus said to him, leave the system. Leave the colonnades. Beautiful shade that it's given you. Leave these people. Leave this support culture that reminds you every day that you've got no chance. Leave excuse making. Leave Bethesda. You need to leave Bethesda. Step out of stuck. And I just got these wellies as this image because someone has left their wellies. You ever been in wellies and been in bogged down in mud? And the reason we stay in the wellies is because of how unpleasant it is to put our bare feet on the terrain. And who's going to recover our wellies? And that is not a bad image because Jesus said to him, take up your bed and walk. And I want to say to you, sometimes you need to leave the mat because the mat also can be a metaphor for the degree to which you're invested in it. And some of you are stuck because you're saying, I can't walk away. I've put too much money into this thing. I put too much time into it. I've got too much emotion invested in it. I've tried too hard. I've suffered too much. I've had too many sleepless nights. I've whatever. Those things that are your investment, as it were, are what you feel you can't walk away from. So your own well-intentioned investment also becomes part of your stuckness. And it's legitimate, and we understand, and we don't want you to lose out on what you should have kept. But there comes a point when you have to say to people, I've said this so many times pastoring, I've had to say to people, listen, you have to walk away. Yeah, but I know I've said to them, but you can stay another year, another 10 if you want. Because you think, well, I'm beyond the point of no return. I've put too much in here. I've got too much invested in here. That's never going to be true. If you are stuck in a system just because you've been there for that long, and I'm more used to this than that, and what comes next scares me because I'm so used to Bethesda. Exactly. We've still got to say to people, you've got to step away from this week from relationships and mindsets and places you go and conversations you have and stuff you read and texting that you do and phone calls that you have. Just start there, stepping out of stuck, and you sometimes got to leave your wellies. The wellies represent, the Wellingtons and the mat represent a reason why you're still stuck, because you're just not willing to leave something behind that you've become attached to, and you're making the mistake of thinking the Wellingtons are you. You think the Wellingtons are you. You don't realize you can step out of them. You can uncouple from. You can mentally step back from. You can emotionally withdraw from. You don't realize because you think it's all you. He thinks that Bethesda is him. He's got involved to the point where he can't see where Bethesda starts and he stops, or stops and it's just one thing. He is Bethesda, and Bethesda's him. And I want you today to decide somewhere in your week this week, I'm going to do this. I'm giving you a language for it. Language, this is what we should be, this is what we communicators do. A big part of what we need to do is we need to give you a language. Once you have a language for something in your life that you can't articulate, once you have a language, now you can master it. Once you have language for it, once it has been mapped for you, once someone has taken you on a GPS and you've arrived at somewhere you couldn't find, and it's now tracked, it's mapped, once you have that, you now have the benefit of a trail of cause and effect clarity. You now can see process, you can see a way out. You can see how you got in, you can see why you stayed, and you can see a way out. So Jesus said, get up and leave. It's interesting. This happened on the Sabbath. And the religious people went crazy. And they saw the man carrying his mat, and they said to him, whoa, hang on, what are you doing? Carrying, doesn't matter that the guy's been healed. Because these people are coming with another system. And throwing their system on him. You shouldn't be doing that Sabbath. Carrying your mat Sabbath. Who told you to do that? What I love about this is he didn't even know the guy's name. Didn't know it was Jesus. We'd have had national news there filming it. It'd been in our screens the same day. We'd have had live filming of it. So how cool Jesus is. Just disappears in the crowd. Goes into the crowd, can't find him. Don't know his name. A guy, what was his name? I don't know. This guy told me. It's his fault. He said, get up, take your mat and go. Later on, the Bible says, Jesus finds him at the temple and said to him, you know what? Sin no more, or something worse might happen to you. Now let's get real about this. When Jesus said sin no more, let's be real. I don't think the guy was man about town sin. I don't think the guy's sleeping around or gambling or he's a thief or he's robbing homes. This guy's an invalid. So what sin is Jesus talking about? Perhaps Jesus is saying to him, your greatest sin is that you surrendered your life to a system that stole your life from you. Sin no more. Do it no more. Knowing that between the miracle and seeing him next, he's had another system put on him called the Sabbath cops. The Sabbath cops are now shutting him down. He just got free from Bethesda. Now here comes another one. You'll get free from yours. You'll get free from yours. Then another one will come. And what Bethesda should teach you is you got to get a nose for it. You got to get a scent of it. Think, hang on, I've seen this before. I am not going back to stuck. This sounds like Bethesda to me. This smells like Bethesda to me. It's hilarious because when Jesus said, go sin no more, and then leaves him, you know what the guy did? You know what the paralyzed guy did that had been stuck in a system for decades? You know what he did? He went and told the Pharisees. He said it was Jesus. Exactly. What an idiot. He was so still systemized, so obligated to systems that he had to go and tell him it was Jesus. Instead of what he should have done, he said, mind your own freaking business. I just beat one system, I ain't gonna be part of yours. Back off. Something like that would have been healthy. Perhaps his sin was. Your sin is that you surrender too easily to being bullied, to being dominated, to being told what to do, to being told what you can't do. Perhaps that's the greatest sin often in many of our lives. That our sin is that we acquiesce, we just submit, we give away parts of ourselves that belong to no one except you. That you should not give parts of your life to any other human being ever and let them control you and manipulate you and coerce you. They become your own Bethesda. I want you that are stuck, if you feel that you're stuck, I'm not going to ask you to stand because you might do that. Some might do that. That would suit some people, but it would embarrass others. And I want to get everybody in this moment. So let's all stand together, can we? Let's get the band back up here. And this is a beginning. This is this is you getting a language for it, and you're not gonna walk out of here maybe with your breakthrough, but if today has got you thinking, if today has got you angry, if today has got you thoughtful, if today has got you hopeful, joyful, if today has let you see that my problem is not that, it's this, then that's enough for today. It's enough for today. And if you're a journaler, write it down. And if you have friends you can speak about this that are not Bethesda people, then tell them a discovery you made today. Be careful who you share it with in case they throw their own new version of Bethesda on you. And you get stuck again in a whole new way, and 10 years from now, I gotta come back. Listen to me, I have been stuck for years of my life and controlled by church mafia people, by religious leaders, by people that were threatened by my emergence, people that were threatened by me getting out what was in me, men that dominated women in the church, so we had this male-dominated church, people that were found their identities by being elders and pastors and apostles and prophets. That was their status and identity. We had a highly organized system of oppression, of containment. Come on, every eye closed. Father, I want to thank you for this beautiful story. Jesus, you're amazing. you're amazing emotional intelligence. For you to tap into this man's real issue. For you to bypass decades of stuckness and free this man in a second from the real problem. And I pray today that it will occur to us, that it will dawn upon us, that things will come clear to us about our stuckness today. And I pray for the courage then, that the courage will quickly come to us to stand up in a place where no one has ever stood up. To walk where nobody walks. To leave a system where no one has ever left because people just die there waiting. To take your life into your own hands. To take your life off autopilot. To take your life back from the system. I pray this will be a beginning. I pray this will start for you today somewhere, that you will step out of stuck. In Jesus' name. Because he hates it. God hates it when you're stuck. It hurts him so much to see people stuck. The cross was all about getting humanity unstuck. Thank you, Jesus. Lord, help me, help us as leaders to not create systems that become our own Bethesdas. Help us not to build Bethesda churches where we overpromise and underdeliver. Help us not as leaders to lead people into dead ends and then make them feel it's their fault that they're not growing or not getting a breakthrough. Deliver us from the default mode of that kind of leadership, which is widespread in your church and widespread in the world, in other organizations. Help us as leaders to spot our own versions of Bethesda and to liberate all we can from the tyranny of those things. In Jesus' name.
At C3, we love stories. If you have a story to share of how God is working in your life, email us at stories@myc3church.net. You can also download the C3 Church app to keep up to date on events, listen to our latest album, and give as part of our tithes and offerings. We hope you have been blessed by this message. Use the handle @C3 Oxford Falls to follow us on social media.